Hello and welcome to the Equitopia podcast from the horse's mouth. This is Caroline Hegarty, founder of Equitopia. In this episode, we hear from Carly Hillier, who is the founder and director of Whitethorn Equine Health in the northwest of Ireland. Carly discovered zoopharmacognosy whilst looking for a way to fix issues that conventional medicine was unable to resolve, and as a result, trained and qualified in zoopharmacognosy 10 years ago. She is now part of a team that helps horses restore and maintain health at the Whitethorn Clinic, as well as running online courses teaching horse and dog owners how to use this method to help their own animals. Carly also oversees the Whitethorn Herbals online shop, which supplies premium plant extracts suitable for animal self-selection. I began to get to know Carly by asking her how she got hooked on horses and herbs.
So it was less of being hooked, but more of an innate sense of just being drawn to horses wherever they were. From a very young age, horses figured big time, from watching Black Beauty on TV, to reading Barney the Donkey, to always pointing them out in fields during car journeys. Horses were in my blood, under my skin, however you want to put it. My first real connection with equines was whilst I was growing up in Surrey, a leafy suburban county in southern England. My mother wanted a sixth child, my dad said no, but that she could have a donkey instead. So that was quite a smart move by my father, from my point of view. So Peppy arrived. Peppy had to have a friend, so Henrietta the goat took up residence in our rather large back garden. As a family with five kids, we ended up accumulating quite a few animals, and at the height of it, we had Peppy the donkey, Henrietta the goat, and around 20 rabbits and guinea pigs and a tortoise with our house number painted on the underside of his shell, if I remember correctly, in case he went rambling and got lost. So needless to say, our house was probably the most unusual house in what was quite a respectable upmarket road. I was around 8 years of age at that time and used to spend all of my time in the garden making model villages and farms out of the gravel in the drive, picking up my mother's rose petals from the garden to take up into the treehouse to make my herbal potions. It is said that what you're drawn to at around 8 or 9 years of age is what you're most likely to enjoy as a career later on in life, and in quite a lot of ways, this turned out to be true for me, working on a farm with equines and herbs.
Sounds like an ideal childhood. I've heard that before, and when trying to choose a satisfying career, you should think back to what you were drawn to as a child, before you were educated out of wanting to do it as an adult. So did Carly make the decision to spend her professional life with horses when she was 8?
It's kind of difficult to pinpoint an actual moment in time when I decided that I wanted to go professional with horses. It has been more of a gradual process, starting with breeding Irish drafts as an interest, and then realizing that the disparity and quality of information as regards how to look after horses was so wide and varied that I thought I'd best go talk to the experts to do it right. So I signed up at Limerick University as a mature student and studied equine science over 4 years. Even then, it wasn't a conscious career move, more of a, hey, this is really fascinating. I really want to learn more about horses. So my work with horses has evolved over many years, from initially working with my own horses and then friends and family animals, followed by vets whilst using homeopathy and bush remedies and various other modalities. After quite a long road of working with different modalities, I've now found that zoopharmacognosy is the most reliable and effective. So that's the modality I've now specialised in.
I'm sure zoopharmacognosy is a term many of you have not come across before. Carly explained to me that it's a herbal-based approach which involves tapping into the animal's innate ability to identify and self-medicate on plant extracts, enabling them to restore and maintain health. I asked her to tell me how she got involved in zoopharmacognosy and why she believes in it.
So I first discovered zoopharmacognosy in an article within a horse magazine. The word literally jumped out of me and I honestly couldn't take my eyes off of it. At that time, my Irish draft mare, Cora, was suffering from serious regular bouts of colic, and I had tried everything to try to reduce or relieve the incidences of colic. Worming, of course, rotational grazing, etc., various different management methods, but nothing seemed to work. I was regularly calling out the vet to give her a shot, and I knew that there must be a better way. So I googled zoopharmacognosy and found Caroline Ingraham was training practitioners in the UK at that time, and so I signed up. That was in 2009. So my first aha moment with this approach was during my training when Cora had a bout of colic. I offered the relevant oils that are known to reduce colic, and resolution was pretty much instant, within 20 minutes. And interestingly enough, for each different bout of colic, for which there were around another four after introducing the oils, she selected differently. So for example, for one bout of fennel might be the dominant oil selected with a little peppermint and wild carrot seed. But then for the next one, peppermint might have been the dominant selected oil with maybe a little Roman chamomile or spearmint. So I could see firsthand that she was selecting according to her specific physiological needs, according to the way her body needed to resolve that particular bout of colic. It was absolutely fascinating and mind-blowing, and really effective. So, but that seems like an age away now. And since qualifying in 2011, we work with and have had success with all sorts of issues, from emotional, behavioral to physical issues, such as wounds, hormonal imbalances, you know, the list is endless.
Most professionals have to overcome challenges as they build their career. And I imagine that starting out in a profession that most people have never heard of must not have been without difficulty. I asked Carly to tell me a little bit about some hurdles she had to overcome when she was starting out.
I guess there were two main hurdles we faced when starting out. The first one was location. We were on the outskirts of Europe in Sligo, which is in the northwest of Ireland. So I spent the first few years in my Jeep travelling the country with a mobile apothecary, giving talks and demonstrations in yards and working with horses and dogs. Now, of course, due to current travelling restrictions, we offer more online classes and online sessions to horse owners. That being the case, location isn't as much as an issue as it was before. Secondly, and probably more importantly, in order to get horse owners on board for this type of approach, there is a significant amount of education surrounding how it works. There needs to be a mindset shift in being able to allow this approach to succeed. That is to step away from administering herbs in the feed, but allowing and more importantly, trusting the horse to select its own medicine. This letting go of control and following the horse and trusting the horse can be really problematic for some.
I think we touched a little on this in the webinar focused on microbial analysis of the hindgut, where we learned that horses know what they need to eat in order to ensure hindgut health. And if allowed to do so, they may sometimes choose to eat things that most owners wouldn't necessarily think to give them. I guess this concept of allowing horses to choose their own medicine is hard for many horse owners to easily accept. But is it just an extension of the research done on hindgut health? Carly's professional focus is somewhat different to what many horse owners may be familiar with. So I asked if she prefers to stick to her own expertise or if she considers it important to collaborate with other equine professionals.
Interprofessional collaboration is not just helpful, it is essential, I would say. Our team vets, Annette and Kirsten, are a hugely important resource to us when it comes to having a deeper understanding of issues that we are presented with as regards horses and dogs coming to us for help. We work as a team to discover what is best from the animal's point of view. These professionals always have the best interest of the animal at heart, and that intention is really important to me. It's also very helpful from a point of view of the safety of combining conventional pharmaceuticals and herbs. There is very little official testing in this area, so we always err on the side of caution when mixing pharmaceuticals and plant extracts. For example, when a dog came to us, and it was an Alsatian, came to us with pannus, a normally incurable disease which takes the form of a growth covering the eyes, the dog was going blind, Annette was able to guide me on the prescribed medication the dog was being given, the root cause of the disease, from which I was able to decide which extracts to offer. The growth in the dog's eyes cleared in 10 days and he was able to see again. The self-selection process was an outstanding success.
That's a nice story about the underdog. I love hearing success stories about animals recovering from illnesses that most people consider incurable. I went on to ask Carly to tell me about any challenges she faces at the moment.
Good question. The major challenge we are facing and meeting at the moment is securing quality plant extracts to use in our work. Because of the nature of this work, in that the animal is allowed to select and to take as much as it needs, it is crucial that the extracts are unadulterated. That means not diluted or anything added or any nasties or fillers or additives. So, or indeed have any residues of pesticides. Otherwise, if this was the case, one would be putting the animal's health at risk, which is completely counterproductive, obviously. And unfortunately, with global warming leading to unpredictable weather patterns and the resultant increase in crop failures, it's getting tougher and tougher to secure a good crop. And as a farm owner and a horse owner that cuts hay or haylage every year, I know and I can see this all too well. Wholesalers and plant processors are more tempted than ever to make a little bit go a lot further by adding fillers. So we meet this challenge in a number of ways. Firstly, by only purchasing human grade products. Secondly, by buying direct from the growers and farmers themselves as much as we're able. And thirdly, using certified organic wholesalers that test each batch as it comes in for pesticide residues, fillers. Just because it says it's organic on the label is not always true that it is. So we like organizations to deal with organizations that test each batch as they come in the door. Another method, another measure we take is we mill our own organic rose hips and milk thistle seeds to make the powders. That way we know the horse or dog is getting the best quality possible, and then obviously the best chance at restoring health. The quality of the herbs very much determines the quality of the outcome, so it's really, really important to work with the best possible materials. Like I say, we are meeting that challenge, but it is ongoing and we have to constantly reach the bar. If the product doesn't reach the bar, then we don't use it. End of story.
Good to hear that. I wonder if there's a regulatory body in any country that monitors natural products, including herbs used for consumption by horses. Surely this would be important to ensure that we don't end up giving substandard products to our horses. We need to look into this a little bit more. If anyone has any information, please do let us know and email us at info@equitopiacentre.com. We'd love to hear from you. I went on to ask Carly about her own horses, if she has any issues with them right now and how she deals with them.
At the moment, there's nothing too major as regard issues in the yard. We have one mare whose foreleg has mud fever that comes and goes. We're in the winter routine, so the horses are out at during the day and in at night. That means they get a chance to clean up the leg, offer some antibacterials, and dress with coconut oil or cream clay or Dead Sea mineral mud, whichever she selects. Like most drafts, she's pretty single-minded and very clear on what she does and doesn't want. And she's also an old hand at Zoocog. The mare gets to select her supplementation every morning, so rose hip, seaweed, barley grass, and dandelion root powder are put down, and she takes as much as she needs. Her yearling has had a fair bit of chiropractic work with our team vet, Annette. She was swinging her right hind in underneath her, but now has improved. So, touch wood, nothing too serious in the yard at the moment.
Good to hear. I next asked Carly where she sees advances in the horse industry.
There's been a huge advancement in attitudes in the horse world in a lot of areas. For example, we no longer break horses, but now we start them or continue with their education. Some may say that we're just using different labels, but to my mind, there is power in words, and there is far more education and knowledge around how it benefits both parties to have a more compassionate approach when in a working relationship with horses. Monty Roberts, quite a while ago, broke the ground in that area, I guess. animal welfare issues are very much to the fore in many developed countries, where certain behavioural activities within the equine industry are now being scrutinised, which traditionally and previously had been accepted or ignored. Also, increasingly, I'm happy to say that vets are now offering different modalities alongside the traditional pharmaceutical approach. So many vets now offer an integrated approach, offering acupuncture, homeopathy, or chiropractic, for example. I guess it's a reflection of the realization that drugs don't fix everything, and there's more than one way to resolve an issue. We're moving towards a more balanced, holistic approach. So instead of relying on one pill for every ill, we are looking to employ many different types of modalities, many of which are more effective and less intrusive than the pharmaceutical approach. And that can only be in the best interest for the horse. And of course, from my point of view, zoo pharmacognosy has exploded in Europe in the last few years. When I started out, I was maybe one of four practitioners. Now, everywhere you look, there's a new organization setting up. That's great that the movement is gaining such momentum. I guess my main concern, as mentioned earlier, is the quality of the products that people are offering to the animals, and for people on that journey also to be aware of contraindications. Herbs are drugs, and as such need to be treated with respect. Another area I've seen a great improvement in is the increasing recognition that horses are sentient beings, helping us move away from seeing the horse as a commodity to a living, feeling being. And whilst that may be a given to most listening here now, in many parts of the world, it is still a relatively new concept, and in some areas, and that is changing, which can only be for the better, of course. Education, of course, is another area that we've seen huge improvements, and especially with all the opportunities to learn online, we have so much more access to education that was previously unavailable. But I guess on that point, I would like to say the students, as we all are students, need to be discerning, because there's quite a lot of questionable information online too. There's an old adage, paper never refuses ink. And I guess if you translate that into today's language, you could say a keyboard never refuses busy fingers. In other words, just because it appears on screen in front of you, that doesn't make it true. So I guess to be a discerning student is the way going forward for me anyway.
Great, lots of progress and lots to think about. I asked Carly if there were any challenges in her view that still need to be addressed in the horse world.
I would like to see a reduction in the impact, or at least better managed, the human ego in the horse world. Easier said than done. Whilst humans need to feed their ego overrides the needs of the horse will always come off worse. Whilst people still use horses to give them status or use them solely with the intention of making a profit, making money, horses will always be vulnerable to abuse. Not all of them, but some of them. Having said that, it's not really very helpful or productive to judge people. The way I look at it is that everyone's doing the best they can with the program that we've been handed down. We're all only learning. Education is the key here. It's a work in progress, and it's step by step. And there are improvements. We've seen massive improvements over the years. So to keep going in that direction, as I say, education is key. Just think, years ago in Victorian London, it was okay to send kids up chimneys to clean them. So things do evolve, things change, and we do see sense. It's slow, but we are getting there.
We are getting there indeed. We firmly believe this at Equitopia. And as we grow in numbers of horse people who want to focus on the well-being of horses and less on our egos, we will get there eventually. I asked Carly where she sees equestrianism in the future.
Certainly in Europe, there's a growing movement towards bitless and barefoot, along with environmental enrichment. With an increase in owners looking to keep their horses in the most natural environment as is possible within domestication. So a growing awareness and education of the horse's needs as opposed to what we want to give them. That in part explains the explosion in the interest of zoo pharmacognosy too, as it's giving the horse access to plants that it would have as if it were still roaming the steppes. So all of that, I think, is really positive. As regards the wider global picture, I'm no fortune teller, but I would like to feel and trust that going forward, the human being will extend more compassion to all animals in our care. And if I may just interject with a personal belief at this stage, I believe that begins with opening our hearts to ourselves as well as to our four-legged companions. From a healthcare point of view, there's great challenges coming down the line with regards to antibiotic and anthelmintic resistance. It's very much on the rise. So, of course, plants and zoo pharmacognosy is a huge ally in this area. But that's something going forward, that resistance, overcoming that for us as a whole in the equestrian world.
We already have quite an extensive list of books recommended by others I have interviewed in this podcast, so I asked Carly for her top pick, and we'll be adding this to the list that's available on the Equitopia website.
At the moment, I am very much enjoying reading The Compassionate Equestrian by Dr. Alan Schoen. Very refreshing read, very enlightening read, and obviously by a very enlightened man. So that's certainly the book that I would recommend for people to go and shop with at the moment.
Finally, I asked Carly what she looks for in professionals joining her team. What are the qualities she considers essential? And are there any issues that she particularly considers important in relation to the area of holistic approaches?
When I am looking at any professional joining our team, I'm looking for them to be not only outstanding in their field, but at the same time being able to leave their ego at the door and being able to work as part of a team and to be open to exploring all possibilities. So the holistic approach again. If we always do what we've always done, we will get the same results. We really need to think outside the box going forward. So, for example, after reading a book called The Power of Intention, showing research and evidence on how our minds affect the outcome, I asked Annette, the vet, during a chiropractic session, while stimulating specific points in the horse, to have the intention of helping shift unhelpful emotions that may be stuck in the muscles, whilst the handler offered essential oils for releasing unhelpful memories. And we did certainly seem to get a better result. It's an area that we're exploring and may seem a little unusual for some, but unless we, as I say, unless we explore other possibilities, we will stay stagnant and therefore always get the same results. And there's always room for improvement in my books. So team members essentially would be able to embrace the holistic approach, to see the horse in its entirety as an individual deserving of a bespoke approach. Every horse is unique in its needs, and if we needed any confirmation in that, we just need to look at their varying selections during a session. Two horses with exactly the same presenting symptoms will both select differently according to their own physiological and biological needs. Just thinking back to Cora and her colics, they were different selections every time. I like attention to detail. There's an expression that goes, the devil is in the detail, and that's really important to me because that's where the learning is and therefore the resolution. So, for example, a farrier will have not just a good working knowledge of the hoof, but also the skeletal structure, the horse's gait, and the horse's nutritional needs to produce a good hoof. They will look at the horse as a whole, not just at the four hooves. So, again, the holistic approach.
Nicely put. And I just want to repeat one thing Carly said. Unless we explore other possibilities, we will stay stagnant and therefore always get the same results. This is so true. As horse people, we must keep an open mind. The world has not finished learning. We do not know everything there is to know. New knowledge and new ways of doing things are being discovered all the time, and we need to keep an open mind and keep learning. And with that, I think we can sign off on another episode. Huge thanks to Carly for being part of this, and to you, thanks for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next month for more From the Horse's Mouth.